Maeve, welcome to Travel Writers Radio.
Thank you, Adeline. Lovely to be with you.
Well, we all know that Australia is a multicultural society, but I don't think we knew just how multicultural until we watched Food Safari. I mean, forget the koalas and kangaroos. They're sort of for the tourists. What makes Australia so interesting for those of us who live here is the access to food traditions from around the world on our doorstep. I mean, how true is that statement for you?
Absolutely, definitely. I think Australia is one of the great undiscovered food paradises of the world. I think it's the pleasant surprise that travellers have when they come here. And for all, us living here, what bounty? I mean, I don't think you can find another place on earth that has quite the mix of cuisines that we do and beautiful produce. And a lot of it, as we're in warmer weather now, you can enjoy outside. You get to eat particularly Asian cuisine in the warm air, and I love that.
Maybe if you just spray a little water as well, you get a bit of humidity as well. That'll just complete the touch.
Indeed, indeed.
I also hear sometimes, this may be overreach, but you can tell me that the foods here cooked by chefs from other countries actually tastes better because of the quality and freshness of the produce. I mean, am I wrong? Because you've interviewed so many migrant chefs, you'd have a truer view than me.
I think a lot of them do say that the produce here is better. Certainly my Indian chef friends say that, they can just reach greater heights with the produce that we have here. The seafood, one chef described it as the best protein on the planet. That in the hands of a great chef is a wonderful thing. The other thing about different cuisines here in Australia is that often chefs particularly, and that's often how we discover great food even more so than home cooking, they're not bound by the conventions of their home country. So they're able to explore a little bit more. And I'm not talking about going into wild fusion dishes because they're often, a little bit line ball. But I think a lot of great tastes are coming out of chefs who are just pushing it just a little bit further and discovering new ingredients and just really creating magic.
So you're saying these chefs, just by virtue of being in a different environment, it's challenged them to push those boundaries and to just explore, and suddenly they have access to different tools? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think it's different ingredients and not having home audience necessarily to play to. So particularly in the French world, it's quite bound by tradition, and those traditions are handed down and they're fantastic. But a lot of chefs trained in the French tradition that are here in Australia can just edge it out a little. And that's exciting. That's when you have food that you take a mouthful and you go, wow, that is just so delicious. And what a clever use of seasonal ingredients, because the basics are the same. I think it's a really exciting time to be in Australia with taste buds. And I know that a lot of people who came here years ago in the, the 60s and even early 70s, there wasn't a dining scene where people regularly went out. There were little pockets of great food. And I was sitting with a Hungarian man yesterday at lunch, and he had started Cafe Vienna in Perth years ago. And that was post-war. That was brave and different. And he introduced people to schnitzels and beautiful cakes and coffee. But I think we have come a long way and we're just really hitting our stride. And I think there are also, as well as major cities where you can go and explore different neighbourhoods that have different ethnic flavours, I think there are also parts of Australia that are becoming really foodie central, and a lot of great chefs are going there to be able to have access to fantastic produce. And two that I'll mention are in Tasmania and in Byron Bay. Those are becoming really interesting food scenes.
And aren't you lucky that you get to be in the front row seat of all this development happening? But let's get to your most recent project. I mean, for the past 3 years, you've been doing a series called Earth, Fire and Water on SBS, exploring cooking in various cultures through these elements. And now you have the book of the same name. It sounds like there are so many hidden gems.
There are so many hidden gems. And I think I've been incredibly honoured to be in top kitchens and tasting beautiful food made by chefs. But it's also the people are cooking in their homes and in their back gardens and on their barbecues or their satay grills or their wood-fired ovens. And the joy of discovery is absolutely immense.
Well, were there things you learned where now you feel like saying to Australia, most of you are cooking this wrong, this is the way you should do it? I mean, are there any tips you
could share? Oh, I'd never be so prescriptive. No. And I really hate the idea that, you know, there's so many thou shalt nots in the food world. Food is really there to be discovered and enjoyed and shared around a table. And, you know, I think there are ways of cooking. Certainly the last 3 years I'm shopping and cooking and tasting differently. So I really don't go to supermarkets as much as I used to. I try and find fresh produce markets because the produce is just so good and will make me look like a better cook. So that's one great thing. I'll also try and find someone that sells fish and cares about that fish. So whether it's a local fishmonger or trying to get to a fish market and, you know, really just from what I've learned, thinking, oh, you know, calamari looks really good. I know I can stuff it Vietnamese style or I can score it and sear it over charcoal. You know, it's just having a few ideas. So I'm probably eating less meat. Also, our cooking devices from exploring the world of fire we've upped the ante there. We've got a tandoor oven in our back garden, which I just love. And I love that we have something, a cooking device from another world that just cooks food beautifully. So you just build a small fire in the bottom and a charcoal chimney, which is like $20 at stores, where you put the some paper in the bottom and some charcoal, put it onto a heat source. So we've got the our gas barbecue with the wood burner, put it on top of that and the coals get nice and hot. Then they get going to the tandoor and then you can cook marinated meats on skewers. You can cook prawns and we can even, we're just perfecting our bread on the sides of the oven. And that's so much fun. Like you're just never going to have that thrill cooking in the oven inside. So,
well, now I'm torn between that and a wood-fired pizza oven or a hibachi grill. Right. I'm like, I don't think I have space for all of them.
And, Adeline, a wood-fired oven, I've learned so many things that you can do with it and at different stages. So pizza is quite, you know, quite a high heat, but then you can think of doing one of the guys who was on our show, who's also in the book, Russell Jevons, does a stand-up, it's a six-minute stand-up snapper baked in the wood-fired oven. He puts tomato, capers, a little bit of olive oil, splash of wine, and in it goes, and it just cooks beautifully all around. It comes out and you go, oh, yum. Open a bottle of wine, whack a salad together, and you've got the best feast on earth. And you're not going to eat as well in a restaurant or enjoy that flavoured journey as much, I think, as creating it yourself. And then when the oven cools a little bit, you can do a slow-baked capretto from Reggio Calabria. You can slow cook beans in terracotta in the oven as well. So, yeah, look, the number of devices, of course, will increase. But I think as life gets more and more frenetic and there are more and more things to plug in your kitchen, to just take it back to the simplicity of building a fire and cooking something outside, there's I don't know, those are great joys.
You know, I was going to ask you what will be next for Maeve, because you've just put down this 3-year project, Earth, Fire, Water. But I think I think you've got the answer there. You just have to take one of these kitchen tools, like the wood fire pizza oven, and all the different things you can just cook in that.
Adeline, you're quite right. What I need to do now is just enjoy the fruits of my labour, work my way through the book. We did a book event a week ago in a suburb of Melbourne, and a whole street came along.
Wow.
They live at Montclair Close, and the whole street came to this dinner. They all bought the book, and over the summer, they are going to work their way through the book and have these street feasts, where someone's got the wood-fired oven, someone else has got a barbecue, someone else is going to do a salad from the book. Because they've got earth, fire and water, they can spread out what they're doing. I was just blown away.
How amazing is that?
Their enthusiasm and, you know, what a great thing to do. And, geez, I want to rock up to Montclair Crescent sometime, you know, in the next few months as they're cooking from the food safari book.
I'm sure you'll get an invitation. What I should mention to our listeners as well is, I mean, I love the inclusion of the recipe for Johnny DeFrancesco's world-famous pizza margherita in your book. I mean, you can actually get the recipe online, but in the book, Johnny actually tells you his favorite brand for pizza flour, and he gives you his recipes for 6 of his pizza toppings. I don't think you can get that anywhere, not that I've seen anyway.
No, and look, he is a master. He won the World Pizzaiolo Championship in 2014. He shared his recipe, which is so generous. And a lot of people are starting out with a pizza oven, you know, need to learn. So we did some photos of how you work the dough to have the cornicione, you know, the beautiful crust on the outside that's slightly thicker and rises beautifully and gives you something to hold on to. And then the other great secret with Johnny is that his dough proves for, I think it's at least overnight, if not 24 hours.
Oh.
And the amount of compressed yeast he uses is tiny. It's like a thumbnail size. But it's the long, slow proving that makes that pizza delicious and beautifully digestible. And I think in a world where you can have a lot of things straight away, to have a dough that proves over a longer time is just better. It just tastes better. And then there's his toppings, which are just inspired. You know, all that simplicity, all the stuff that we love about Italian food is there on those pages.
Well, that sounds like an absolutely must try, but I know all the recipes are like your children. You can't possibly choose a favorite from the book, but if I can make you choose 3 of your favorites, what would they be?
Okay, so in the herb section, there's a Turkish recipe for a red lentil pasta. So you cook red lentils, you add some capsicum paste, some cumin, some spices, and then you create little balls out of the red lentil. Really delicious. You serve in lettuce leaf cups, and there's a pickling liquid that you use with onions that turns the onions beautifully bright pink, and you eat with a squeeze of lemon, a little bit of chili on top. That was on our Christmas table last year, and it was a huge hit because it's just delicious, but it's also really great for vegetarian people coming to Christmas. I love the deliciousness of it. It keeps for a while. That's one of my favourite recipes. From this fire, a Vietnamese recipe, it's beef wrapped in betel leaf, and it's cooked over fire. There are no secret ingredients here. It is ground beef and pork, sesame seeds, black pepper, some barbecue sauce, some Chinese 5 spice, a little bit of golden syrup and some lemongrass. And this is the mix. And you can just do this as little patties that you can cook over a fire. But our friend Ben Nguyen wraps them in betel leaves and threads them on a skewer and cooks them over fire. And they are just delicious. And you serve with, you know, a mound of big Vietnamese herbs and some vermicelli noodles, and it's fresh and so lovely. And, you know, put a betel leaf on the barbie, I say. And then from the water, I love Thomas Deliopoulos, a Greek restaurateur in Oakley in Melbourne, who just gives us a secret on cooking octopus. and he puts the octopus in a big pot with some red wine vinegar and bay leaves and just cooks it slowly. So the octopus releases its liquid. It's so tender. You can have it straight away or you can preserve it in oil, or you can put the octopus and just grill it on a barbecue. And that is delicious, and I never would have known how to do it without him. So, you know, there's an earth, fire and water across three different cuisines. But you can mix and match, and that's the great thing. I think, you know, the book sort of compresses multicultural Australia in all its delicious vibrancy. I'm so proud of it. I'm a proud mother.
We'll try to get one of those online for our listeners, but maybe it's been fantastic. Yes, I'm sure they will love that. And also
they're
look out for the book, Earth, Fire, Water.
Doable. Yeah, oh, that's so charming. I would love people to, you know, combine Turkish, Vietnamese and Greek. And, you know, that's where we're at in Australia.
And invite your multicultural neighbours, yes.
Yeah.
Maeve, it's been fantastic speaking with you and what a wonderful effort. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Adeline. All the best to you. Happy Christmas, happy summer and happy cooking.